Welcome to Societal Shapers, a podcast by PL Cadilla, the place to get inspired, find your purpose and courage, and get tools to become the next female leader, creating real results and meaningful changes.
Welcome to the Societal Shapers podcast. Today, here with me, I have Farida Hamid. What drew me to interview Farida is her courage to be vocal and speak what were on the minds of many, and her ability to convey hard-hitting messages, all at the same time keeping it tactful, respectful, and personable. So our topic today is about being bold, speaking up even when you're scared. So before we get into the meat of our glorious conversation that's about to come, Farida, please introduce yourself and tell us more about yourself.
Hey everyone, Pia, thank you for inviting me to be on this podcast. So I'll keep it brief, just a little bit about my background. I'm from actually Teluk Intan. I was born there. Right now, currently, sorry, can we re-record that? Re-record that, please. Can we start again?
Sure.
I didn't want to go back to the background. I wanted to start with where I am now. So can we just re-record that?
Okay. So yeah, that's fine. You can just go ahead because then he'll cut.
All right. Okay. So thank you, PL, for inviting me to be on your podcast. So if people don't know who I am, you can actually go to my website. It's www.faridahamid.com. But briefly, I'm currently a conscious communication coach, which means that I work with people to become very conscious of how they're communicating and the kind of language that they are using. Now, why do I do that? Because after 25 years working in corporate life in communication, the one thread or the one fundamental pattern that I've seen about people who are successful versus people who are not that successful is their ability to articulate and their ability to communicate well. So I do a lot of programs related, both business as well as leadership programs related to communication.
That's great. Great job and great work that you're doing there, Farida. So tell us more about how did you get into this? So you mentioned you have 25 years of corporate experience. So it'd be interesting if you could highlight some of those pivotal moments during this time that made you realize how critical communication is.
Well, I started my career as a current affairs and investigative journalist in the mid-1980s. It was my dream to become a journalist. So I was really lucky that I was able to study that. And then I worked for about 5.5 years in a daily English newspaper. And I thought I was a big deal when I joined the newspaper because I had a degree, I had an American degree. But I very quickly learned within the first couple of days at the news desk, in those days where they really didn't care whether you had a degree or not, because the news desk was run by veterans, people who never went to university, but who like had worked their way up in the news media. So I learned very quickly that I was not going to be treated special. There was nothing special about me and that I was going to have to learn from the ground up. So everything that I had learned at university about print journalism, you know, to write articles and all that, I quickly realized that while there were some fundamentals in how a story is told, it's very different on a day-to-day basis. So it was basically starting back from A for me. And I had to write and rewrite and rewrite because just to tell your audience who may not be familiar with how newspapers work. Often on a day, we have got 3 or 4 stories that we have to do.
Okay? Yeah.
You have to go into 3 or 4 interviews. And then you have a certain deadline by 5 o'clock in the evening, your stories have to be in. So you're writing very fast. And you don't have like 5-6 pages to write. You have like a certain amount of space in the newspaper. Right. So the biggest lesson I learned as a journalist in terms of writing and telling a story was how to take, you know, like 2 hours of an interview and condense it into sort of a hard-hitting story and removing all the fluff. And I continue to tell people today that, especially in the social media environment that we are today, where everybody's SMSing and, you know, people on video and people on podcasts and all that, people can speak relatively well. But being able to write well is on a whole different level. And there's very few people who can write well to have clarity in their thought process to be able to communicate through writing. So to me, that was the most important lesson I learned. And that lesson has seen me through every job that I had. But just to quickly give you a sort of a 360 degree. So over the next 10, 15 years, I did the rounds of the communication industry. So I went to public relations for a while. Then I went into publishing, and then I went into Strategic Communications, which was an advertising company that did nation branding.
Yeah.
So the reason I did all that is because I wanted to get a sort of a wider experience in the whole communication industry in the country, so that after about 10 years, I could kind of decide which part of that industry was the one that I really wanted to work on.
Yeah.
So there were some jobs that I really liked, some jobs I didn't like, but a lot of people ask me today, which job is still your favorite? And I have to say it was my first job as a journalist, because I met amazing people.
Yeah.
I learned about human psychology.
Yeah. It was probably your most steep learning curve.
I mean, it was amazing because I was very shy, Pia. Yeah. A lot of people look at me today and say they can't believe I'm shy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, but I was really shy, and you had to deal with ministers, you had to deal with the mayor. I got a chance to meet Queen Elizabeth, have tea with her in Sri Kosa. So you meet people from all walks of life, which then teaches you how to speak to people at different people from different classes of life. That is such a gold mine of experience about communicating that I don't think you can find in any other job.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, just listening to you explain all these parts about communication makes me want to join your program. So, great marketing. Yeah, it's really important, right? So I agree with you, like, you know, writing skills and communication skills, completely two different skills.
Yeah.
And honing both is actually really, really important, because it gives you that structure in your head. So I wanted to bring it back now to the topic of our podcast today, which is about being bold, right? So communication and being bold. So now let's find out a bit more about, you know, what is it about being bold?
Okay, so when you talk about bold, when I say the word bold, what comes to your mind?
It's about speaking out what I really and truly think. It's about, not about wanting to offend anybody, but, you know, wanting to be able to voice out how I feel, what I think, in a way that brings up, that makes a discussion more robust.
Yeah.
So I think
speaking
up for my rights is also part of being bold when things are wrong, right?
Absolutely. Bold is actually, to me, just very simply, is speaking up even when you're afraid. Because a lot of people equate, when they look at people like you and me, or many of the other so-called women who are in the news, or, you know, on TV or whatever, they think, oh, they're so brave, they're so bold. But the truth is, every one of us have our own fears, and we all have our own insecurities, right?
Yeah.
So sometimes you look at somebody and you think, oh, they seem so brave. But, you know, I won't say we're all just like you, because I think that's also another myth that a lot of trainers will say, oh, I'm just like you. And that's not true, because we've been through a lot of our own training to get where we are. But we still have remnants of that fear. So when I talk about bold, I just want your audience to know, it doesn't mean you don't have fear.
Yes.
Right? It just means you've learned how to manage the fear and to mute the volume of that fear, because you have a bigger purpose about why you're speaking out.
Yeah.
And most of the time, what I tell my clients is, when people get, you know, I'm so afraid, they come and tell me, I'm so afraid to say this. And I say, get out of your own head. Because when you say that you're afraid and you keep repeating, I'm afraid, that means you're thinking about yourself. The ego is in play. But when I tell them, get out of your head and think about what you're trying to do for somebody else, you can see people just relax. Because when you get out of your own head and your own ego, you get into intention and purpose. And you have a bigger purpose for why you're willing to face the fear and speak up. So it is something everybody can learn.
Yeah.
There is nobody who cannot learn this. It is not a gift. It is not a special talent. We can all learn it, but there is work to be done to learn it. And like anything in life, it's a muscle. You have to train it. You don't expect, you know, like, you decide today you want to be bold, and then tomorrow you're going to be bold. It is taking the tiny, tiny steps to get to that place where you get very comfortable voicing your opinion about things. And then the communication has to come in as well, where you know how to frame your thoughts.
That's right. I mean, I love what you've just said, right? So going back to intention and purpose. So especially so the podcast is actually targeted more towards the young audience, right? Particularly female young talent. And so hearing you speak, there's so much wisdom already there, and you can tell that you're very experienced. And saying that you were once upon a time a very shy person, this does not come through right now. So maybe you can share a bit more about, you know, times or events during your younger times. How did you overcome that, right? So telling people to, you know, get out of your own head, it's kind of easier said than done. So, you know, what were the trigger events that pushed to say, okay, you know what, I don't care, this is it. I'm going to push myself out of my comfort zone, because otherwise I understand what the repercussions are.
So let me tell you a story of one of the events. There's been a whole series of events that led me to where I am today. But perhaps one of the first most dramatic events happened to me with one of the jobs that I was at. I won't name the company, but it was an American company I was working for. And I had been hired at a certain grade level. Mm-hmm. If you ever worked for an American company, I think you will know they kind of have grade levels where when you're employed, that grade tells you what your perks and your benefit and your salary and all is, you see. So I found out soon after I got the job that I wasn't being given one or two very important perks compared to other people who were in the same grade level who were being given those perks.
Were they male or were they both?
They were all male.
Okay.
They were all male. And so I did first, the first thing I did was, because perhaps my background is an investigative journalist, I don't go and shoot off my mouth. So I went and did a little investigation.
Yeah.
And I found out that firstly, that these people were on the same grade level were being given perks that I was not. And so as terrified as I was to go and ask why I was not being given the same perks,
yeah,
I think it was my curiosity perhaps, and maybe I was young and I was a bit more naive. So while I was scared, I was like, you know, I'll just go and try, you know, nothing to lose. So I went up to, I think it was one of the most senior people within the organization. And I just asked, I said, I'm kind of curious. And I had my documents with me to, you know, to compare. And I said, this person, all these people are being given, why am I not being given? So the person answered gave me an answer. I was quite flabbergasted because it was a stupid answer and it didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
And when I tried to ask a little bit more, they just shut me down. So because they shut me down, I got even more curious.
Yeah.
And a lot more annoyed. So sometimes being angry or being annoyed can be a good fuel to go and get things done, right? So then, here's another lesson, right? I was very good at making friends with people in places that I worked. So I was very good friends with the executive secretary of the number one person. She was the secretary to the number one person in the organization. So I went to her and I said, oh, you know, can you tell me a little bit more about what's going on? And she said, they're being very unfair to you because you deserve it. Technically, you deserve it. And so she helped me get some other background information that wasn't readily available. Uh-huh. And she was taking a risk. And so she passed that information to me. So I just kept digging. And I kept asking and I kept asking. And I kept being shut down every time. So finally, they appointed a new HR director. And he was a Malaysian. So I thought, oh, okay, the Malaysian, he's an HR director. Maybe I'll get somewhere with it. So I went to him again with all this information. And he listened and he said, oh, Farida, we'll get back to you. Next thing I know, within a week, I'm called into the office where the Malaysian HR director and the number two are sitting there. And you know how you can feel when you walk into a room, the energy is like really tense. You can feel it.
Yeah.
And so the moment I walked in, I felt it. And they both had very stern expressions. And they said, we've got a letter for you. Mm-hmm. And I said, what is this about? Said, no, we're asking you to resign. And I said, why? No, you know, you don't fit in with the team. And I said, is this because I'm asking for what I want? Said, and they didn't want to give me an answer. So I think they didn't want to commit themselves. So they asked me to resign. And they said, if you resign quietly, we'll give you a testimonial or a recommendation. So I went back and at that time, I was already so angry about the way that a lot of the Malaysians were being treated in the company. Mm. And I was young. I was in my 20s, late 20s. So I had already kind of decided that maybe it is time to go. I didn't want to fight it at that time because I just didn't feel it was worth the energy and I was already sick. So anyway, so I come home back to KL and this is where the story gets really interesting. Okay. So bear with me.
Okay.
So I come back and I'm crying and I'm feeling, you know, this lack of self-worth and what should I have done? And my first time ever I was fired.
Yeah.
Okay. So then my friend who was the executive secretary told me, if you want to pursue this, she said, I'll give you the access, I'll give you the contact number for the Malaysian, the company that owns it in Malaysia. I mean, in KL.
Yeah.
The head office is in KL,
yeah,
and the MD is a Malaysian. So I thought, okay, I've got nothing to lose. So she gives me the contact. I write a letter. This is before computers and all that. So I had pretty much wrote it in hand. And I sent it off to the MD in KL, never expecting in a million years that he would respond. Never. About a week later, I get a phone call, and the MD is on the line, and he's saying, I got your letter, Farida. And he said, I'm going to investigate what happened.
Wow.
And my jaw just dropped open, and I thought, I cannot believe this is happening. So I just thanked him, and then he went off. And then he calls me back a week later, and he said, I have done my investigation. Do you want your job back? Because if you want it back, I'll give it to you right now.
Wow.
And yeah. And this is a couple of months after all this had happened. And I was like, I didn't know what to say. And he said, I'm really, really sorry that this happened to you. This was not right.
Yeah.
And he said, we've taken steps to make sure that the Malaysian staff don't go through this anymore. But your job is there if you want it back. And I thanked him and I said, no, I don't think I want to go back, because I think there was a lot of bad blood. If I'd gone back and
there was
a lot of bad blood.
Yeah.
So then, so that actually proved to me that, you know, sometimes you think you're a tiny, tiny player in a big organization and you don't have a voice. But just because I decided, hey, I'll just do it.
Yeah.
Because you know why? I had a bigger purpose, because I thought, it's not just me, I've left the organization.
Yeah.
But I didn't like the way the other Malaysians were being treated. And so I thought, I'll just send it off, if it, you know. And he actually reacted. So I always tell people, don't assume no one's going to do anything about it. Because that's just censoring yourself.
Absolutely.
And then this is just a little bit more addition to that story. So the executive secretary, who was a very good friend of mine, calls me later. And she gives me a blow-by-blow account of what happened at the executive meeting.
Wow.
And how the MD like scolded the entire team, and they were all in shock because they never expected that me, who was at that time considered quite a junior person in the organization, would have gone to complain to the top person in the organization.
Yeah.
But what came out of it was that they were a lot more careful about how they treated the local staff, and I think in particular women.
Deserving
so respect.
It goes to your story back about, you know, the importance of being bold, right? So you never
even
know.
Even when you're scared.
Even when you're, especially when you're scared, right? Because you will either regret it one day, or you will never know the impact that you would have made if you had spoken up at that time. And in this case, it literally changed the entire culture of a company and the way how they actually treated women, especially back in those days.
Yeah. And Malaysian, because this was a foreign company and the Malaysians were being given a bit of a short shrift about it.
Exactly.
So when the shift happened in my mind when I thought, I'm already left, but if I can make a difference for everybody who's still there, then it's worth it.
Yeah. I think this is a great story that, you know, people, a lot of people till today, especially women in particular, can obviously relate to this story, because every time in any company that you're working in, there will always be some form of bias. Especially in larger corporations. So it's just about finding that voice within yourself to be able to speak up and also be smart about it, right? So obviously the letter that you wrote was, I'm sure it was very well written and therefore caught the attention of the MD. And this is
my journalism background helped. So everything in life helped.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a shame that, you know, the journalism industry is actually dying because of like social media and all that stuff.
That's very sad.
That's
because when I used to, in the early part of my training and training business years ago, I used to do a lot of work with universities and spoke to a lot of young people. And they would always ask me what I would recommend job, what job should they go into. And I 100% of the time I used to tell them, whatever you're studying, if I were you, I would go and work a couple of years as a journalist, because it teaches you how to deal with people, which is a life skill.
Yeah.
But you are right. With the way the industry is going, it's just very sad to see what's happening.
Yeah. And that's something which, you know, hopefully whichever media that's still surviving at this point would be able to still continue, you know, reporting in ways which are fair and just and, you know, properly done, right? So not just one-sided, not biased, not to like win votes or not on the instruction of like some invisible politician. So I think that's a really important part. So going back to the bull pit part, right, Farida, I just wanted the audience to know, so one of the events that really pulled me to Farida was on her recent LinkedIn post. So the recent LinkedIn post was talking about something that happened on social media. So I don't want to draw our attention to this particular LinkedIn post, but just how to navigate your way in such a noisy space, which is social media. That could be, you know, either LinkedIn or Facebook or Twitter, just anywhere, right? There's a lot of noise, especially now that everyone's kind of transitioned towards becoming more digital. So more people are coming online, therefore more voices. And then how do you scuffle through all of that and find, you know, like your voice, for example, because there's so many. So, you know, how do we navigate through something like that? I know this is like a question that we've not prepped ourselves, but just came to mind.
Well, I would say trial and error, because you're absolutely right. It's about finding your voice, right? Because being bold and finding your voice goes hand in hand.
Yeah.
And so in social media, it's true. It's become very, very noisy.
Yes.
And what I find in social media, and you are right, ever since COVID happened, it's like everybody has just gotten migrated onto social. And what I find in social is everybody is shouting so loudly about themselves.
Yeah.
Which I find exhausting because... Yes. See, everybody is trying to brand themselves and they're trying to show their thought leadership and they're trying to sell their product or their service and all those things. But you see, social is just it's just a tool. The fundamentals of how we as human beings relate to one another, the fundamentals of how we communicate our value doesn't lie in shouting at you. Like if you're selling something, you're going to sell something. What didn't work in the 1960s doesn't work now either, which means that you're pushing stuff in people's face without showing the value, without showing who you are, about building relationships. So what I see on social is people just are not taking any time to build any relationship. They're just trying to push their expertise because they've got some certification or they are, you know, they've appeared as, you know, on some magazine or they've won some award or whatever, which is not a fair reflection of what you know and how substantial your knowledge is. And this is what is in social media. It's very superficial. We all know it's all very superficial because people put up what, of course, the best parts of them. Yeah. What I'm trying to bring to the conversation is to strip away all that superficiality and talk about things that matter to me.
Yeah.
Because I also realized that when I started talking about things that mattered to me, I saw a great deal of people coming and sharing their thoughts and ideas. So,
yes.
So just to sort of keep it a little bit simple is that don't try and showcase how amazing you are. Have conversations with people. Don't make it one way. 99% of people are pushing stuff in your face rather than having conversations. Now, about being bold, I think there's a cultural aspect in this part of the world as well, and particularly with women, to have a point of view or to disagree or to have a strong point of view about something.
Yes.
And so I've had some pushback. As you know, I've had quite a bit of pushback. I've been called names on social media.
Right.
But the difference is because I'm not a young person, I kind of have learned how to navigate it. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't keep me awake at night.
Yeah.
Because I am very clear. I have clarity about why I'm posting this topic and I have some experience. So my advice to your audience, it's a younger audience, is that you don't have to start off being controversial. But there are a lot of things that have happened to you in your life, even if you're 21, 22, 23, 24, there are things that you are thinking about. There are things you're looking at in the world out there that you disagree with, or things that you are curious, why is this happening? Write about those things because you don't have to have the answer. You can just have a thought and say, you know, I've been thinking about this. I'm wondering, what do you guys think? Because this is bothering me, or am I not seeing it right? Right?
Yeah.
So start building that ability to be able to ask people what they think. Now, the second skill which you will have to learn is you will have people attacking you.
Yeah.
The louder you get, the more strident, the more outspoken the way I am, you'll get a lot more people and a bit more harsher feedback. What you'll have to understand is, first thing is, don't get angry. Because the reality is, everybody has a right to have their point of view.
Don't take it personally.
Don't take it personally.
Yeah.
Okay, you sometimes feel personal because they call you names, which has happened to me, right? So put those aside. You don't have to respond to everybody. That's the first thing. Secondly, just listen whatever people are saying. Even if you don't know what else to say, just say, thank you, I appreciate your point of view.
Yes.
If that's all you know how to say and you don't know how to respond back, just say, thank you, I appreciate that you're sharing your point of view. But get into the habit of giving voice to the thoughts that you're having. Because this is one thing I promise you. Whatever thing that you're thinking about, that you're curious about, that you're struggling with, or that you're feeling challenged with, there are thousands and millions of other people in your age group who are going through the same thing.
Yeah.
With social media, nobody wants to talk about it because everybody wants to appear like they know it all.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to appear like they you know, their life is perfect.
Yeah.
So bring the human element to your social. Talk about these things and slowly you will start getting more confident with your voice.
Yeah. I really like this. So because, you know, one of the... Why I was trying to tease out of this part, Farida, is because when you just look at, be bold even when you're afraid. So just having that voice in social media, right? I can think about it in terms of, okay, I'm going to sell myself out there because everybody's doing it. So that can be, that kind of falls under be bold and don't be afraid, overcome your fear, right? Which is selling myself shamelessly on social media, trying to position myself as, you know, I'm perfect and I'm the expert. But then there's also the other part of being bold, being true to who you are and engaging with other human beings. And rather than just pushing all this information out there.
Yeah.
So I hope that the audience, you know, is able to tease that out also from Farida's comments. So I don't want to repeat the or summarize the whole thing, but I think all the bits and pieces is there. So you just have to listen again to the podcast, I think.
Yeah, I just want to add one more point. The reason why I say have human conversations, have a conversation, don't talk, have conversations, is that you build credibility because you're having those conversations. When you're trying to pushing any product or any service, just think how you also don't like anybody pushing anything in your face. If there's no relationship, why would anybody buy anything from you? Even though you may say you have 10 certificates, you may have 10 awards, nobody's going to buy anything from you.
Yeah.
But if you've taken the time to listen, to build relationships, then when you do get ready to sell something, there is credibility behind it.
That's
so and when you are young, I know a lot of young people are impatient, and I say that with kindness. I'm not being, you know, I'm not being one of these older people who's like, you know, saying, talking down to millennials. That's not true. But I'm just saying, you know, there's so much, there's such a hurry.
Mm.
There's such a hurry to be successful. And I will never understand that. Because you and I both know, PL, true success, true substance, true credibility takes time.
Yeah.
So don't be in such a hurry. Build yourself first. Because the time will come when you are then ready to then be an expert.
Yeah.
You know, that you will, people will look at you and they'll want to hear what you've got to say on a bigger stage.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's a brilliant point, Farida. So those are, I think, also tailored to the younger ones who's trying to look into how do I build my personal brand, my credibility so that, you know, I can become more hireable, become a successful entrepreneur. So now just moving back to the audience, whom I have that passion to want to nurture more is actually these systemic change makers, particularly female, right? So these are the ones who are probably going to take positions in the public sector space. These are probably the young female and male in a way, thinking about how do I change Malaysia? How do I become, so if you want to connect that, you have to be in politics to a certain extent, right? So the point that I want to say is that in terms of building that credibility and building that voice and being bold in terms of, you know, who you are, but then now discussing something that's happening in the country politically, now a lot of people shy away from that because then they know that there's going to be a lot more of other people then attacking them or putting them down, disagreeing with them. So a lot of people just try to stay away from this sphere, which is wrong. And I want to encourage, you know, any young person out there thinking of building a career in politics, even though it's not a straight cut career, Farida, what is your advice for this group of people?
Okay, so when it comes to politics, my biggest advice to young people is if you're interested in going into a career in politics, firstly, don't be, I know it can sometimes feel like it's overwhelming. It can sometimes feel so disappointing. It can feel exhilarating at different moments and different seasons of the country. But you are in a position, these young people, you are all in a position to decide where the country is going to go for the next 10, 20 years. We know that the way things are, we cannot sustain it. And I want to address this issue of diversity because, see, when we talk about diversity in the public sphere, too often it's about gender diversity. And, you know, we always hear it at International Women's Day. But the point I want to make is, if you look at nature, nature is so abundant and it's so diverse. Nature has got a lot to teach us. Yeah. Because if nature is so wild and abundant because it is diverse. It is the same with us. We are, everybody in the country deserves a voice about where the country is going to go. Yeah. So don't be afraid of diversity. You need to have different voices at the table where policies are being made for the whole country. You need gender diversity, you need racial diversity, you need religious diversity. Am I missing any diversity? Age diversity.
Yeah.
Right? Because sometimes when we get into the conversation about youth, we tend to be a bit tunnel vision that, you know, only the young people are going to change the country. But that's not true, because when you're doing policies about, we are going to be an aging population in 10 years, 2030, Malaysia, officially under the UN standards, we will be an aging population.
Right.
Okay? So you need older people, younger people, you need the disabled. Also, all of these people have a right to be at the table as we are creating those policies.
Yep.
Because if we are only having one voice, one type of voice that is directing or controlling the conversation, it is very short term. It may work in the short term, but you're never going to create policies that are going to work, that are going to be sustainable in the long term. So coming back to how do you get involved in politics? I think if you're in your 21, 22, 23, the first thing I would tell you is you need to learn how to listen. Listen to people who don't agree with you.
Yeah.
Because to me, that is the biggest point. I mean, when you look at the debates in parliament, you want to die, okay? You're like, you want to curl up somewhere and, you know, pull your blanket over your head. And you're just like, you know, the quality of the debates and the conversations in our country have gone down to such a low intellectual level when our leaders are supposed to be role models.
Right.
That's why, and when you look at a leader, when you just talk about leadership in general, leaders are supposed to showcase the best of who we want to be.
Yeah.
Right? Not the worst. Right? Exactly. You are in positions of public trust.
Yeah.
You are a public servant. There's a reason you're called a public servant.
Yeah.
Right? You're in public trust. So I would tell these young people, get involved. If you're in college, get involved in your college union, you know, your student body, whatever. Learn how to talk about your vision, your point of view, what it is you want to create change in.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. Now, if you're already outside of college, but you're still very curious about going into politics, go and join a political party. Just get into that environment so that you can kind of, you then imbibe the atmosphere. You get comfortable to see how things are done. You get a clearer understanding of how politics works in this country. You will get a clearer understanding of where you think things need to change. Mm-hmm. And then just talk to other people, diverse people, different ages, different age group, different racial, religious, class. Talk to them. Ask people what they see for the future of the country. Because that data is going to be really valuable for you. Because as I said at the beginning, the only way forward is that if we have diverse voices at the table, otherwise it's just not going to work.
Yeah, I love that. And I think you're absolutely right. I love the advice on sharpen your listening skills, first and foremost. And then I think, you know, just to add on to that as well, is to deepen your knowledge about everything that you can possibly know, right? So from human psychology, all the way to how institution works, expand your global awareness of what's really happening in the world, because you need to have this level of depth when you're going to have a intellectual discussion. As you grow older, as you mature, it is expected that you would be able to hone all of this knowledge and be able to communicate your ideas and your point of views as well. So it is work in progress. It requires patience. It requires, you know, the ability to internalize what you're seeing, what you're observing, and then being able to articulate that back in a way that's not aggressive, in a way that, you know, it doesn't push people up the wrong buttons. And so, yeah, I think it's a brilliant advice. So here you are, you have all the advice. If you want to build a career in business, if you want to build a career in the public sector or even politics, here you have all the advice that you need to be bold and speak your truth. So, you know, I would like to thank you, Farida, for joining us on this podcast. Before we end, I want to ask you one question in terms of, if you had one book or one piece of information that you could share, a TED Talk or podcast or anything that you would recommend to the audience, what would that be?
Okay, so I got the book with me. Actually, I got two books. The other book I don't have with me, but the book that I would say pretty much changed my view of the world when I was around late 20s was the Tony Robbins Awaken the Giant Within.
Yes.
So you can find it in all the bookstores. It is still my favorite book of all time. I revisit it a lot because, yeah, you know, this is how it is with books, right? When you read it in your 20s, you take different things from it. Then in your 30s, you different lessons.
Exactly.
So like all my favorite books, I revisit them every couple of years so that I listen to different things. But I've got another book that I think this book I got about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's called Tools of Titans by Tim Ferriss.
Okay. Yep.
And Tim Ferriss has got an excellent podcast as well.
Yes.
But what I like about this is, and I think it's good for young people, is the stories are short.
Yes.
So I think he's got like 100, yeah, I'm not sure, maybe 100 people. And these are all, it says the tactics, routines, and habits of billionaires, icons, and world-class performers.
He's the same author of the 4-Hour Work.
And he is interviewed. Correct.
Okay.
And so he's taken all the podcasts that he's done with them and he's just condensed it into like 3-4 pages. Each story is about 3 or 4 pages, so it's really easy to read.
Yeah.
And they all have talked about their, like, what is their morning routine? And they're all world-class performers, right? So you have athletes, you have billionaires,
yeah,
you have health experts.
Yeah.
So all in different areas, what are the challenges they still face? They are highly, you know, they are already at a very high level of excellence, but they also have their insecurities and their challenges and how they deal with that. So I think this is an easy read. You can keep, you know, revisiting that. I revisit this one all the time because it's fantastic.
Okay.
So I would tell people to read that.
That's this book,
yeah, if you
could. I cannot wait to start reading that book now. And I have the Giant Within You. Awaken the Giant
Awaken,
Within You.
Awaken,
right?
Awaken.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, it's a classic.
Thank you so much, Farida, for your time. It has been such a lovely conversation. And I'm sure you'll be invited back to the podcast.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Thank you, Pia, for inviting me. I had a wonderful time. And I hope your audience will take away, I always say, if there's one thing you remember from what I said, I've done my job.
Yes. Thank you again. All right.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening in. If you liked it, give it a thumbs up, subscribe, leave a comment, and share with your friends. Be sure to tune in to the next episode, and to find out how to be part of Societal Shapers, head to www.plcadilla.com and check out our coaching programs. Catch you soon!